Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
From the home of time.
It is now quite a day for local sport from your local team.
Woo! This is Charlton Live.
When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along, there'll be no more sobbing when he stops robbing his home. Sweet song, wake up, wake up, you sleepyhead, get up. Get up, get out of bed, cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, love and be happy. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red Robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
So 50 years an addict, 50 years of crap referees and disappointment. I'm starting to wonder if Terry Smith is bad luck. Welcome to Charlton Live. So good evening, everybody, and welcome to Charlton Live here on your Sunday evening live on Maritime Radio. My name is Louis Mendes, and joining me in the studio as we look back at yesterday's hugely frustrating, slightly controversial, perhaps, two-all draw with Milton Keynes Don is, first of all, Nathan Muller. How you doing, Nath?
You're not bad, mate.
Yeah, you did just proclaim this was one of the happiest days of your life because we've got biscuits in the studio. Didn't you get married recently?
Yeah, and I'll stand by my comment.
He didn't have biscuits.
He didn't have biscuits at the wedding.
No bourbons to be had at all.
Well, I'm glad I didn't come. Joining the pair of us, of course, Aaron mentioned in the introduction there, the man who celebrated the 50th anniversary of his first Addicts game yesterday, Terry Smith. How you doing, Tel?
As disappointed as ever.
Yeah, congratulations, of course, are in order.
Appreciate it.
On yesterday's achievement.
I don't know if it is, it's just me being old, isn't it?
We got a little shout at half time, didn't you?
I did, yeah, I was very pleased.
Yeah,
and a hug from the skipper, by the way.
Yeah, a hug from the skipper. You've got plenty. You got sweets thrown at you by the manager.
It was
a great day. On tonight's show, we will concentrate more on Terry's anniversary later on, because obviously when you've got a man so experienced in the field of watching Charlton, there's plenty to be talked about, plenty of history to remember. But we will start off by looking at yesterday's game, a two-all draw with Milton Keynes Dons, the former club, of course, of manager Carl Robinson. We're going to hear the highlights from that here from the manager after the game. He came in to speak to Terry. Want to hear what you guys made of the game and, of course, of the important decision right at the end there, the penalty. I put out a poll on Twitter earlier to find out if you guys thought it was a penalty or not. you probably won't be surprised by the results to that, but we will talk about that. We'll do a little bit of history with Terry. Our player in focus this evening is Ben Reeves, so I want your comments on how you've seen his performances so far this season. And if we have time, we'll look ahead to the Rochdale game. Of course, we are going to be reading out your tweets, your emails, your comments on the Charlton Live Forum throughout the show. So if you want to get involved, make sure you email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Charlton Live, or you can head over to the Charlton Life Forum. There's a thread on there for tonight's show. Just very quickly, Tao, before we go into the highlights, your 30-second summary of yesterday's game.
Should have won, didn't, and the referee was an absolute... And I'll leave that there. But look, we should have, before the penalty appeal, before the dodgy... Actually, even their dodgy equaliser, we should have put the game to bed. We had the chances. We dominated that first half more than I've seen us dominate most teams. And so we should have put them away. We didn't. And as we've seen more than once in the past, and certainly in recent past, that comes back to bite you on the backside. And it did. The sad thing is that if it hadn't have been for... two decisions, both of which cost us goals.
Excellent. Well, let's have a listen back to what happened at yesterday's game. Here are the highlights brought to you by Greg Stubley and Mr. 50 Years himself, Terry Smith.
It's over in front of the security box on the Charlton right-hand side. Swung into the penalty and arrow. But get it! Oh, what a header! In front of the keeper to give Charlton the lead. The simplest of finishes, but he had to be there and he was right on the money. Lovely corner. Little flicked header, Charlton 1-0 up.
It's been a great start from the Addicts. It's a lovely corner from Jake Forster-Caskey, and McGuinness does so well. The goalkeeper's there. It should be the goalkeeper's ball. It's in that six-yard box area. And McGuinness just is stronger. He just wants it a bit more. Just flicks it on. And I'm just watching the replay now. The goalkeeper will be very disappointed with it. Nichols, he should have got there. McGuinness wasn't to know. He just flicked it in, and it's an empty net in the end for Josh McGuinness. He's had that heartbreak with Northern Ireland. He's back for the Addicts, and he wants promotion, and he's got the opening goal of the game. 1-0 Charlton.
Lovely control by McGuinness. Turn. He's making space for himself. Oh, tried to find Ricky Holmes. Just didn't quite get it right, but Saar strides forward and takes it over. Takes the shot. Saar! Oh! Oh. Just underneath the crossbar, and it was plucked out of the air by Lee Nichols to stop it going into the roof of the net.
Oh, he hit it well. Nevi Saar, there's a player with confidence. Pressure from Solly. He tries to switch the play and he'll come to Ricky Holmes here on the centre circle. Holmes will go on the run. He's got McGuinness to the right who he uses. McGuinness approaching the penalty area. Still Josh McGuinness in the penalty area. McGuinness closed down, switches across. Oh, oh, just behind. Oh. Reeves will pick it up. Back to Forster-Caskey. Shoots deflection. Off the post. Oh, stepped out. McGuinness will get on the end of it. How did that not go in? McGuinness will leave this for a Charlton throw. To get onto his left foot will now chip towards the far post. Constance there. Constance flicks it back in.
Oh, chance. Too big a header.
Forster-Caskey got under it in the end. He's right in the centre, right in the six-yard box, and headers over in the end. He'd be disappointed without Jay Forster-Caskey.
Too much on it, didn't he?
And there is the half-time whistle to conclude a fascinating first half here at the Valley. Ball forward has been picked off by De Silva. Good ball down the line for McGuinness, who can turn. McGuinness looking for some support, and Reeves is offside, but Marshall isn't. And Marshall's run through. Mark Marshall through on goal. Oh, it's a good save by Nichols. And it should have been a goal, really, for Charlton.
That was clever work, both from Reeves and Marshall, but I cut away.
Charlton will have this corner anyway, as Ricky Holmes looks to take McGuinness, Marshall and Forster-Caskey all underneath the goalkeeper's nose. Holmes swings it into that near post. Oh. And it all... And Ricky Holmes, you might remember last year against Rosebery, scored directly from corner. Tried to do exactly the same there, I think. Tried to catch out Nichols.
Certainly trying to get it right
onto the roof of the net in the end. Under pressure from Anike, chips the ball forward towards McGuinness, who flicks to his left looking for Holmes. It's been cut out, but good work from McGuinness to win the ball back from Charlton. And De Silva run forward for the Addicts. De Silva, lovely ball to his right, finds Ben Reeves, shooting opportunity. Reeves, oh, good block. Handball appeals, but I think that's a good block in fairness to Goulburn. He got his body in front of it. Don's try and find Anike, and the ball's
the
forward.
That's
and Reeves gets there first. And surely that's a foul, but McGrandall's nothing given as Reeves goes down on the ground, and MK Dons will play on with Agard. Agard down the line for Williams. Williams trying to cut in onto his left foot. Good pressure from De Silva. It'll come to Gilby. Closed down by Cashy. He goes left to Goulburn. It crosses in towards the far post. It's over the head of Saar, and it's headed home by Agard. The back post. Out of nothing really for MK Dons. It's a lovely ball in from Goulburn. And Agard diverts it past Amos. The substitutions have worked for MK Dons, and we're level here at the Valley.
It all comes down from that missed tackle in the centre field when the MK Dons man just went straight through the back of Reeves, and Charlton were a man down as a result. awful refereeing, absolutely awful refereeing. A clear foul straight through the back of Reeves, which you can't do. You just can't do it. And Charlton switched off a little bit. The cross came in, and oh, it was a good header. You've got to give him credit for the header, Agard. But there's no way that play should have been even close to being up that far.
Gets the ball in the box towards Reeves and finds Reeves. Reeves on the turn. Deflection. Was that handball? It would have probably been a harsh decision.
Close. I mean, he might have done, but he was too close. There's no way you're getting that.
The ball deflected up into the arms of Nichols in the end. Forward from Amos. Goes on the halfway line. It'd be an easy header for Williams. Yes, forward. And Constance misjudged the ball. And Ike's through on goal. And Ike fires wide. What a miss from Chucks and Ike. He won't have an easier chance all game. It was a rare mistake from Ezri Konsa. Misjudged the bounce of the ball. And Ike went through on goal. And the former Charlton target somehow fires wide.
He had
wide.
To score, didn't he? He had to score one-on-one with a keeper. You don't slam it like that. Ricky Holmes with it, swings it in. It's close to the keeper, but it's headed away by...
Someone's got to be there. It's a good ball.
This time by Anike. It's run all the way out to De Silva, who chips it back into the box. Sars onside. Little touch from Sars, straight at the keeper.
Oh, he's got a score.
Straight at the keeper. McGuinness was offside. He didn't try and play the ball. Sars wasn't. Hits it straight at the keeper, rolls it out instantly to
the header. It's dropped in midfield to Kashi, who's going on a bit of a run here. Ahmed Kashi, can he tee up Fosu? He can. Edge of the penalty area, Fosu on his left into the box. Oh, it's a goal!
Oh, Goldburn has put it in his own net. A crossfield ball by Tariq Fosu. Goldburn trying to get his foot round it to clear it away, and all he's done is slam it into the roof of the net. Superb work from Ahmed Kashi in the build-up, and Charlton have the lead with only 3 minutes left of normal time.
Oh, unbelievable. The great work from Mark McCashy to drive the ball forward. We're screaming for him to pass it to Fosu. I thought he left it a bit too long. In the end, he manages to find a substitute. And I think Fosu's going for goal. He tries to go on his right foot. He looks to take the quick shot. He's miscued it totally. Tariq Fosu is going wide, and Goldburn, with I think McGuinness pouncing towards the back, just tried to clear it and has somehow diverted it into the net, and Charlton have the lead again. Unbelievable.
Something on it. It'll drop to Nesbitt in the box. Oh no! Oh, he's given. Oh no! What? He's given a penalty. No way! This again. The referee is a yard away, and the official over here on the near side has given a penalty. Oh, again, the referee a yard away gives nothing, and the official over here flags like a lunatic to give a penalty. I didn't see it, so clearly to know whether
McCashy.
It was.
I don't know whether he got the ball. I'm not sure. I'm not 100% certain. It's one of those you need to see again. If he does, it ricochets back off the MK Dons player, but it was a dodgy foul to make in the penalty area. He didn't need to do it. To even give the linesman the opportunity to do that was poor from him.
It's Agard with the penalty. 4 minutes of added time here. Agard steps up against Amos. And he scores. And the officials have conspired, I think, to rob Charlton of that. To all.
Yes, a full-time whistle.
So welcome to back to Charlton Live. That was the highlights of yesterday's game and some very shouty mascots who came into the studio beforehand. Now, I mean, so many talking points from the game, but you're always going to focus on the main one, the last one, the penalty shout, Nath. You walked out as soon as it happened.
Oh, yeah, no. So as soon as I saw the Lionel Withy's flag, which I wish I could shove it somewhere, but but yeah, as soon as I saw that, I didn't even see him get the ball. I walked out straight away, and I was...
Oh, so you didn't know he saved it then?
Eh? Yeah, no, I think I was just past the club shop when I heard the roar. So, yeah, I mean, from my view, I couldn't see it. But like Greg said, I mean, it was silly, maybe, on Cash's part to put a challenge in there. But I'm still unsure looking at it. But I would say it's more of a not a penny than it was. But I don't know. But I just thought the referee, from where I could see, the referee had a direct view of it. So then if he's in the best line of vision and he doesn't give it, then surely you'd only go to your lino if you're in doubt as a backup, wouldn't you? Because you're supposed to be the main man in the middle, surely.
Come on, carry on.
So, well, my theory on this is, and I do like to put some conspiracy theories out there quite a lot, is I think so. The ref, I believe the referee hasn't made a decision because he's not sure. Mm. Now the linesman, rightly or wrongly, and in my view wrongly, has made a decision because he is sure, and therefore the referee, being not sure, can't overrule his linesman who is sure. So that's why I think he can't do it.
Can I add to the conspiracy theory?
Yeah.
I think the linesman wasn't sure either, but he had an opportunity, having been really at his ear burnt for the most of that second half by Nielsen from the and the MK Dons dugout generally. Mm. I mean, really been giving him a hard time because, to be fair, he'd missed pretty much everything the whole game. I mean, some of the challenges that were going in, and, you know, we go back a bit further, that the officials lost the game, I'd say two-thirds of the way through the first half. And suddenly it became a very, very, you know, before, and there was nothing in the game in terms of spite or any of that. Suddenly, two-thirds of the game, because a few challenges had gone missing from both sides, because I thought their centre-half Onyeka had been clattered a few times and he didn't give it. Certainly McGuinness had been clattered regularly and nothing was given. So it developed into a game that it shouldn't have done.
And there was that flare-up just before half-time, wasn't it, when I think was it George Williams who took down Ricky Holmes and held him on the ground as well. Yeah. So, yeah, but you're right. It did become a bitty and an aggressive
game. And that suited MK Dons completely. And I think because of that, and because of that, I think MK Dons realised that they needed to change the game plan. And I think they were in that linesman's ear a lot. And he started giving little decisions. That wasn't the first one. There was a few before that. He just started giving decisions that were really strange. And it was just, I mean, you'd have to see it to understand. But looking at the go, you know, when he gave the penalty, it was just the sheer vociferousness of the waving of the flag. It wasn't like a little da-da-da, oh, excuse me. It was full on, like he was guiding a plane down to land. It was manic. And the referee, as you say, was looking straight at it, had no intention of giving a penalty, I don't think, at all. But because the linesman saw a chance to maybe appease the ear bashers behind him for the last second, he saw an opportunity and took it.
It was one of those rare occasions as well where after the game, but before the press conferences and the interviews, we all got to see the incident again. Someone who'd had the game on iFollow on Twitter had managed to film it on Twitter and put it up, so we'd all seen it quite clearly. So we had to bend it. I mean, I was in that tunnel watching it with the club's media team, and then cover of some walked past, and I was like, and he'd already seen it as well, obviously. And he, I mean, he was angry. He was waiting for the referee. It took ages for him to come to the press conference after.
Because he
did a couple of interviews, and then the referee became available. So he was a long time.
That did us no favours, as you'll hear in a minute. Because it seemed he'd run out of anger by the time he got in here.
he calmed down.
I don't know about calm down, because he came in and said, look, this can't be long, lads, so can you make this quick?
Did he come in here before he went
he came in after that. Right. So he'd obviously vented his spleen a lot before he came to us. But, you know, we've seen it back, and what Cashy does is he doesn't really make a challenge. He sort of goes behind him and puts his foot down beside his foot. But obviously there's, you know, the guy can feel him there. And he's gone over and gone down. Now, do you blame him for that? No, probably not. You know, a lot of people would, and do exactly the same. Was it a penalty? Absolutely not.
At the same time, I saw a lot of comments yesterday and a few that have come in today, which we'll come into. If you've emailed us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk, you've tweeted us at Charlton Live. Quite a few people saying, what's Cashy making a challenge for there? I think you've got Esri coming back, and possibly Naby Sarr, another player already there. So does he need to make that challenge? And if he doesn't make it, there's no decision to be made?
No, I don't think he needed to make it. Because if you look at where the guy of Nesbitt, where he had the ball, and where the ball and where his body's ended up, he's going away from goal. So he's not really in a place of danger. He's going away from goal. The ball's going to take him out to the touchline, which you'd shepherd him out, wouldn't you? And he's dipped his foot in
panic. That's all that is.
Like you do a hot bath, and then he's obviously, if you do that sort of thing.
People are going to now start thinking of Nathan in a hot bath.
Yeah. Oh, please don't.
I can't stop thinking of anything else now. Alison tweeted in saying, listening back to those highlights just confirms the ridiculousness of yesterday's match. I mean, it really was a great game in terms of if you were a neutral.
Oh, yeah.
Plenty of stuff. I had a couple of neutrals sat behind me, and they were really enjoying the game. Now, this afternoon, I put it out to a poll on Twitter to find out what the fans thought. Quite simply, was it a penalty, yes or no? 27% said yes, 73% said no. But unfortunately, this did at some point get hijacked by MK Dons.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
I noticed that, you know, every now and then, if there's a controversial decision, we get involved. You know, we had the issue with the Rotherham fans a little while ago, but that only one or two of their fans get involved. MK Dons fans, There's loads of them on Twitter, it turns out. And my theory on it's because they're MK Dons is a club desperately trying to find an identity, and they've obviously chosen Internet Geeks, which is fair enough. there was a good point on the Cheltenham Life forum from SD Addict. Says, when talking about the game yesterday, I think it's really important to remember that we absolutely bossed the game until their goal. Their goal came from basically their first chance. Up to that point, I thought it'd be one of our most assured performances at home, dominating possession and creating chances. We probably should have been 2 or 3 up by the 63rd minute when we conceded. After that, we were poor, but I just didn't want the first 60 minutes to be overlooked because we often only focus on the end of matches, understandably. And that's a very fair point.
And by the way, and it's gone a bit unnoticed and under the radar because of the penalty, Reeves was taken out. No question about it. In midair, from behind, taken out for the first goal.
Yeah.
Now, in any walk of, in any game in the planet, that's a foul. So how did he miss that or not give it? It was just bizarre in the extreme.
And then when I was speaking to Carl, he was sort of saying, like, if the foul for the penalty is a foul, then surely the one on Reeves in the build-up to the goal is also a foul. So obviously a very contentious decisions. But as SD Addict says there, I thought for the first hour yesterday, I thought we were superb. I mean, other than taking that chance, I mean, I thought we pressed MK Don so high. That first 20 minutes, they couldn't get out of their half. Mm. Every time they had the ball, we were 3 or 4 men in front of their faces, and that fast start, we were rewarded with that early goal. And I think we talked about this on Thursday actually with Josh McGuinness. Now he's had a big disappointment in the last couple of years. 2 years worth of work trying to get Northern Ireland towards the World Cup, in a way snatched away by a very dodgy referee's decision. Probably used to it by now. But so important for him to come back and to build his confidence straight up with his first goal in a little while.
Yeah, no, we said on Thursday, would it get to him? We all sort of agreed that I don't think Carl and all the other lads will let him get down, and because he's obviously quite a confident character. But obviously it's something that Jacko's worked on in training, because they seem to celebrate and have a good chuckle at it, because obviously that's what they worked on.
Well, yeah, well, Carl mentioned it in the BBC interview after the game. He said that was literally, that was one of Jackson's set pieces, and they were really glad Jackson noticed some a deficiency in the way MK defend set pieces. Yes, like you said on the Friday or something, because they've been working on this specific one. So it must be it must feel so good when you've been working on that and you pull it off. So
yeah, I mean, because I haven't seen the goal back, but did he run across the front and then go to the near post?
Yeah, because the near post, the keeper's come out and he's just beaten.
So I mean, that's what I mean, and that's what Josh is good at, and obviously they've worked on it. But obviously, you can't do doing the world a good. I thought he worked like an absolute Trojan yesterday. I mean, he gave that a Banks Landell, which isn't a slight geezer, is he? That Landell, he's a bit of a lump, but I thought he gave a good as he's got yesterday, Josh, and obviously got the goal that he obviously deserved from his performance yesterday.
We've seen games recently as well where perhaps teams have come and tried to make it difficult for us, like the real Wimbledon a couple of weeks ago, and sometimes it can be quite hard to break them down. So to get such an early goal, to, I guess, was sort of exactly the start we were needing, and that's when you need to build in it. I think in terms of the flow of play, we did build in it. It's just taking that second chance.
Yeah, I think so, and I think maybe, I know we're sort of second-guessing a little bit and possibly clutching at straws, but let's say it's a more up-to-speed Ben Reeves and Mark Marshall, or a fully fit Fosu and Clark on that side in that first half, rather than what we had, and maybe we'd have exploited it a bit more, because Mark Marshall, I thought he put a shift in, a real shift, but he just seemed reluctant to try and take his man on too many times for me. Cut back inside, and we know he can cross a ball superbly. So maybe I was probably a little bit disappointed that he didn't try and take his man on a bit more and give McGuinness the ammunition he craves to build on that first headed goal, because as we saw, they didn't deal with that particularly well at all. We didn't get enough crosses in the box after that for me.
I think it's actually possibly a bit remiss of us not to mention the move that led up to the corner before the goal. It's a superb move. Agreed. They ended up releasing Jake Forster Cassie down the right. In terms of free flowing football on the floor, I mean, intricate passing around the edge of the box, I mean, you try it a lot, but that was the first time that we really pulled it off, and it looked excellent, and thought we were going to get a chance from that.
Yeah, I thought we looked very very good. That's one where Holmes did it. Was it Holmes that sort of hit it?
It was Holmes and Forster Cassie
across
all
the ball,
involved,
on the right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, there was loads of times yesterday we was so I sit out there with Paul, and you just sit there and go, we actually look really fluid and look really, it's like nice to watch us nowadays. And yeah, like you say, we've done it a few times, and they just couldn't get the ball of us. They couldn't, even with our back four, when we were 1-0 up, that Chucks and EK was just huffing and puffing, sort of getting the ump, because they just couldn't deal with us just passing it around them. And obviously Holmes drove at them and he passed out wide. And yeah, like throughout that first half, we looked so comfortable on the ball. I just thought, I think I could see us winning 3-4 here, I think.
Yeah, I'd agree with that pretty much completely. I think the previous, was it a tweet or an email, was said about they didn't really have a sniff till 63 yeah. minutes, which is true, but I thought the game changed about 10 minutes before the end of that first half when, as I say, the ref let it, and the officials let it get out of control. We lost shape, and I think it gave them a bit of momentum and showed them that they could get at us, and they just became more physical. They changed their approach, and I didn't think we were as effective as soon as that happened.
Well, there was a spell. I mean, even from... I mean, after that first time we cut them open, which led to the corners, what led to the goal, then our real chances were coming from distance. I think after a shaky opening 15, they solidified, made it hard to break down. Then we were seeing the long shots. So we had Cashy, Holmes, and Naby. So, I mean, if that Naby goal had gone in, that would have been...
That we'd have all packed up and gone home.
That would have been the best comeback since Jesus. I was really
worried about Greg next to it, because you know, obviously, his reaction when Cashy scored. But if Naby Sarr had got that goal, there'd have been no stopping him. He'd have been away.
I wonder what decibel he would have got to.
but then we had that really good chance. And this was on 24 minutes. Again, probably the first time since that opening 5 minutes that we've really got him behind him, and the ball to McGuinness, and at first I thought he was going to attack and maybe fire across the goalkeeper. I think he probably rightly didn't fancy himself from the angle he was at, so he held, got towards the byline, crossed it behind everyone, but I think it was Reeves who picked it up, sent it back to Forster Caskey, and it wasn't the truest strike because it took a deflection straight away. And then, but I mean, how can it hit the inside of a post like that and not go in?
Yeah, perhaps we should have seen the writing on the wall when that happened, because for all the world, it looked like, even as it hit the post, it's got to go in. It has to go in. And then to roll all the way across the line and off the other side was just... It was despair, I think, I suppose. And when you're playing and watching, you must think, oh, God, is it not going to be our day? I mean, I know we were 1-0 up at that point, but even so, you'll say, oh, those have got to go in.
There was just a sight of our potential weakness when Cashy gave the ball away on the edge of the box, where we were trying to play it around and just got caught out, but nothing really came from it. And then another decent chance for Forster Caskey. The corner headed back towards Konza, Forster Caskey headed over, and there has been times this season where we've taken a goal and now we're listing chances that we miss and then we go on to rue it. And I guess that is one of these cases.
Sadly, yes.
But as the game went on, I think really they had their first real chance, the shot from Powell that deflected wide. And then it was just not long before half time, just I think in injury time, where we saw, like I said, this flare up between their man, George Williams, and Ricky Holmes, where Holmes was getting away and he bundled him down and then just sort of laid on top of him, refused to let him get up. Now, again, I saw a video of the incident this afternoon. And some people, I mean, it's a yellow card for the bundling down. Is it another yellow card for holding on to him, or is it all part of the same?
Yeah, I think it's all part of the same process. I think, as much as I get what people are saying, maybe the pull back in the first place is a yellow, and then the whole wrestling match afterwards potentially is another yellow. But the referee's pulled it for the incident, so I don't think you can necessarily expect the referee to give two yellows. It's not likely, is it? If he'd have run across and flashed the yellow card straight away and then they wrestled, possibly. But it's never going to happen before he even flashes one.
So the referee needs to be quicker in these situations.
Well, it's just never going to happen. Actually, one of the funniest tweets yesterday was Tom Wallins, because he was commenting on the way the referee was running.
Oh, yeah. Had his stunner in his shoe, didn't he? I wanted to go and take it out for him. He was doing my head in like a little chicken.
I'm trying to remember if Tom's listening. I'm trying to remember the music he said. You'd have to listen. If you listen to it in your head as he runs, it's really funny. And I couldn't remember what it was.
We had the big chance at the start of the second half again. To and this was quite a clever play by, who was it in the middle, who knew they were offside?
Possibly, Reeves.
So the ball had gone through. Reeves clearly offside, but he just stepped out of the way and did it enough to not be interfering. And Marshall was the one more alert to it than the MK Dons defence, who I think were waiting for the flag to burst through. Mm. So, you know, good on him for bursting through, but disappointing with the finish. The goalkeeper's done well to smother him, I guess.
Do you reckon three or four more games into his season? Because basically he's only had a couple, hasn't he? He puts it away?
Yeah, I think so. I think it, as well as his run, I think if he put that onto his right, I think that would have been a goal. He was on his weaker foot, but yeah, I agree. If he's a lot sharper, I think. And he sort of knew, you can tell in his face, he knew it was a chance that he probably would have put away last season, without a shadow of a doubt. But give him time, and he's getting in those positions. And it was, it was a good play. But I really wanted him to score. I just want him to get off the mark now, because I think once he gets going, I don't think he's going to be unplayable. I think.
Well, we already know that. Yeah. We've witnessed it from first hand experience.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's funny because everywhere we go for away games, they all pretty much seem to say the media team or the people in other in the opposition areas say, "Oh, you've got that Mark Marshall now, haven't you?" Mm. Oh, he ripped us apart when he came down here with Bradford.
It was the same as last. It was the same as last when we first got Holmes. And who did we have first game in the season? Was it Berry? Yeah, and Berry was saying like, "Oh, you've got that Ricky Holmes," and I don't think I've seen him and stuff. And yeah, so it looks like we've got a player. Just want him to get up to speed now, just so we can see the proper. Yeah,
it takes time,
doesn't
it?
Yeah, of course it does. Yeah.
Hopefully, we've seen some glimpses already. Now we've mentioned the build up to the goal. We felt it was a foul on Reeves, but after that, I guess you are going to look at the defender for the goal. And I think are you going to question whether Naby Sarr got caught underneath the ball a bit there? Was the cross too good? Was his position not quite right? How do we go with that?
Yeah,
I still think we were all still expecting the referee that he should have pulled out for the foul. I think we switched off.
Yeah,
I think you can't. You got. It was a decent finish. You got to give him credit for that, and they exploited the gaps, and there were gaps. Mm. Maybe we got I think it was Naby, and maybe even Ezri got dragged towards the ball rather than concentrating on who was in the box. And I do think they just all had their head around the fact that should have been a foul. Yeah. And they weren't concentrating.
It was interesting because Robbie Nielsen made all these substitutions in sort of quick succession there at the start of that second half.
And it changed.
And it did change. And yeah. It was one of the subs, Kieran Agard, who scored both goals in the end. Now, straight away after that, Ben Reeves had a shot from inside the area. Some appeals for handball from Reeves himself as well and from behind the goal. But it was very close, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm not sure you can give that.
No, really. I mean, I was right behind it. I thought you'd be harsh to give it.
Too close, and he didn't lift his hand up or anything. It wasn't. What's the phrase? Wasn't in an unnatural position.
Unnatural position.
Yeah. So I'd have been. That would have been more surprising than the one he eventually did give.
and then a huge chance for Chuksunike bursting through. Now that was that miss was shocking, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bursting through. I mean, you have to work the goalkeeper at the very, very minimum. In the end, he took out MK Dons' oldest fan, who of course is 42, sitting behind the goal.
But yeah, I don't know what Ez was doing for that guy. He let the ball bounce, didn't he? I think, and he just sort of, I don't know what happened. Or from my view, it just looked like he's tried letting the ball bounce, and he's been outmuscled. I think.
That's, do you know? I said it before the game, and this is not an "I told you so" thing by any stretch. But I think Naby Sarr, who's actually been a revelation this season, I think, compared to what we saw before, and Ezri Konsa are both very similar style of players in as much as they want to play football, which is fine when you're dominating the game. And they're not getting a look in. I thought the first half they were exceptional. I think it's slightly different when you're under pressure. What you need is a Patrick Bauer or a Jason Pearce who are no nonsense. Get the ball out. Don't worry about pretty stuff. Just clear your lines. Yeah. Get rid. And I think when you haven't got that and you're under pressure, it can put us under undue pressure at the back. And I think that sort of started to happen latterly in the second half, especially.
Yeah. I mean, Pearce is the absolute personification of that style of football. But you're right. I mean, it did feel like for 10 minutes maybe after they equalised, we fell apart.
Yeah.
And that was disappointing.
You just couldn't handle the pressure. And so we were trying, and you've got to laud them for it. You're trying to play football, trying to keep the, what do they call it, the mentality of trying to play football and play your way out of trouble, which is great. And I think if you've got one person who can do it and then another person who thinks, well, actually, now's not the time, wallop, then I think it's a perfect match. And as I say, when you're dominating play and you've got a midfield that's strong and you're really going at teams, it doesn't show up. When they're on at you, and they're putting you under pressure, it starts to look a bit of a weak link.
So it took us maybe 10-15 minutes to sort of shake ourselves out of that little slumber that we found ourselves in after their first equaliser. Then we did start putting on the pressure again. Ricky Holmes with some good runs, winning those corners, couple of corners in quick succession, the second of which ended up falling to Naby Sarr. Now, it's funny really, because after one of the Checker Trade games, Carl was talking about how he'd be tempted to play Naby Sarr up front, but off the top of my head, I can think of three sitters he's missed recently. I mean, he missed one at Oxford as well, where the flag was up. He missed one yesterday in the first half, where I think the flag was up. And then there's one, we missed one in the Checker Trade, where it was square to him and he fired it over. Now, yesterday, a corner's coming, it's got headed out. He's done the right thing in terms of lurking, thinking, oh, this is going to come back in. He's timed his run perfectly to beat the offside trap. He just didn't have that confidence in himself to catch that volley properly and fire it at goal.
Yeah, I mean, if he would have banged that top corner, then
I would have started up front the next game. But, but yeah, no, I think everyone wanted him to score, but it was just, I don't know. I think because he had so much time, he probably overthought it, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
And let's be honest, when you saw the ball going into the box, you thought, well, that's a great ball, and then you see who it landed to. Be honest, you're thinking, this ain't going in. I mean, because, you know, Nabisar, I said before, I think he's been a revelation compared to the Nabisar we saw a couple of years ago. But, you know, yes, stick him up front, mainly for his size and the fact that he'll cause defences trouble, not because he can finish with a volley from the edge of the six-yard box.
I would have loved that if that went in.
Oh, that, again, it's a bit like a long shot. If that had gone in as well, we'd have all been, you know, we'd probably all still been running around the valley, wouldn't we? But
I do think the first Nabisar goal since his comeback is going to be a great moment.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be a hallelujah moment. Now, someone who does know how to finish, Scott Goldburn, sadly in the room there.
Can I ask you a question, by the way? Was that a genuine tweet? The TW.
Yeah.
No, that was you. I didn't know whether somebody had. It's like.
No,
good. Right. I'm pleased about that.
I got a bit excited when that went in.
I could tell.
You can normally tell. I do get excitable when we get a late wide.
Ewan Mendes, BBC correspondent, described the goal by saying Goldburn had. It rhymes with hat. And begins with TW.
Right. I thought you said TW. You were going to say Tony Watt then. Hang on.
TW rhymes with hat and into the roof of the net.
Well, I reckon he's been thinking. He saw obviously Nabby's. He said, I'm going to show our Nabby how you do it. It's like, bam.
Goal scoring defenders. Maybe Goldburn wants to come and sign for Charlton because.
And play up front.
Sees that Robinson likes a goal-scoring defender. But, I mean, starters, the drive from Ahmed Kashi, I think it was their goal kick, actually. And he picked up in midfield, and that drive, that energy late on, and Carl does talk about how we ended with high energy. That's what we had in space at the end there, and that drive was excellent. Made space for Fossey. Now, I don't know what he was trying to do. He tried to wrap his right foot around it, but he got it horribly wrong.
Oh, he was trying to score, no question about it.
He got it horribly wrong, and he's going out. But Ahern Grant did the right thing to put a little bit of pressure on the defender and forced him into a mistake. I mean, 99 times out of 100, that's not going to happen. But he's tried to turn it around. It's skimmed off the top of his foot into the top corner. And it was really funny.
I don't know about skimmed off the top of his foot. He leathered it.
He
absolutely leathered it. You can see what he was trying to do. And I mean, I generously said on commentary that Tariq had, it was like a crossfield ball. No, it wasn't. He sort of toe-poked it. He was trying to wrap his foot around it. He completely missed it. He toe-poked towards... and I thought, well, Goldburn's just going to put this off for a corner now. And he just thundered it into the roof. And there. It was a brilliant finish.
I was enjoying that moment. But then... And then we have the controversy down there. I mean, we are going to pick a bit at it a bit. I mean, it's the second time in the last 4 or 5 weeks. So you remember Walsall, where we've gone into a 88th minute lead and still not won the game. But I mean, Carl will say that it shouldn't have been a penalty, so we would have seen it out anyway. But like we say, there are questions perhaps whether Ahmed Kashi should have made the challenge, whether it was a bit of panicking because they're in the box, it's the last minute, we need to see this out.
No, it certainly was that. You know, we were desperate to try and hang on, which is not necessary, actually. You know, when you consider the reason we went 2-1 up is because we were putting them under pressure. The best form of defence and all that, you just keep that pressure on. And, you know, they got the ball up fairly quickly, and I think it was panic. I think Kashi's just trying to... I think what he's trying to do is just put his foot beside the player to stop him turning around and getting a shot off, and just putting pressure on the player, which he does in midfield regularly, and it works. But in the penalty box, as soon as the striker, or whoever he was... Was it... As soon as he felt the pressure, then he went down and he chanced his arm, if I go down I might get something, and he did.
Now full time, now you're frustrated about the result, but you try and look at the, you know, speaking to people after the game yesterday, frustration about the result, the penalty kick and all that, but I think the overall feeling was, you know, we've come out of games where we've drawn before and not played well, and thinking, oh, it's bloody load of rubbish. You come out yesterday thinking, look, we've done well today, you know, it's disappointing, you're not going to win every game.
Yeah, no, I put on Twitter yesterday, I was raging yesterday. I was just so gutting because we played so well, especially that first half, that first 30 minutes. And then even up to the 60-minute mark, I thought we were still in control of the game. And I think it was just because it's all happened so late, and it just seemed like we didn't deserve to draw the game. But yeah, I mean, if you look at it in hindsight, yeah, we play really well. We're sitting third in the league. It could have been worse, like it has been previously. So, and you know, we've got two games in hand. We've got big game on Saturday. So you know, it's gutting, but
in the context of things,
yeah, it's gutting. But we didn't lose. That's the thing. If we lost, it'd have been like.
I think what compounds it is the fact that Shrewsbury go up and score a last minute winner, and Bradford beat Wigan.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, that sort of compounded the whole frustration of the end of the afternoon, I think.
But we have got those two games in hand, which is important to remember. Now, obviously, Carl Robinson, after having calmed down a bit, came in to speak to Terry Smith after yesterday's game. If you listen carefully, you'll be able to hear him lobbing quality street at Terry at the start of the interview.
Joined by Carl Robinson in the studio, and can you possibly put your emotions into words? Well, words that are able to be broadcast anyway.
Well, first and foremost, everyone wondering what I'm doing.
He's eating one of my sweets, is what
you're doing. Yeah. Was it 50 years to today that you first 15
to the day. 50 to the day. Could have been better, but we didn't lose, I guess. But there we are.
I feel even more good.
Well, it sums up my 50 years, basically. some great football, great people, frustration, and rubbish officials. That's pretty much what I've witnessed over the last 50 years, to be
Snap.
Honest.
Not 50 years, though. Listen, today we were excellent. The fans were excellent. The players were excellent. I think everyone in the stadium knows we were the better team. He's a very good MK Dons team. Managed very well, supported very well. And we deserve more. Our fans at the end showed the support again that we needed. The players are on the floor in there. Got to pick them up. Got a few injuries. But we go again on Tuesday.
I mean, from the sidelines, and you watch things unfold. I mean, their equaliser when Reeves clearly got taken out from behind.
Not only did he get taken out, the boy was out of control. He was airborne.
Yeah, absolutely. And the referee that close doesn't give it. Is when you're on the sideline, is the writing on the wall almost? And do you feel something's going to happen that's not going to be right?
Yeah, but that's football. Listen, today I'm proud of our club. Sometimes in life, that I think we're always judged on so many different components of life in general. And the one thing I always say, even to my daughter, that things that are out of your control, never worry about. There'll always be people that'll be trying to dig you out or say things. But if you have no control over it, don't let it affect your psyche. Don't let it affect your mood. Don't let it affect your talent. Not that she's got many. I'm only joking, Jasmine. She's listening. But never let. So it's the same with the players. Don't let something that's out of your control. What we had of control of today, we achieved our goal, and that's all I can ask.
Is it now a case of trying to turn that into not into a positive? That's not the right word, but
over 2 months now in the league without a defeat. That's enough for motivation. We're going to go through bad times, bad performances, bad results. The roller coaster of the football league season is what it is, and we're in a great position. We've got two games in hand on some teams. We've got some big games coming up, some difficult games coming up. And for us, we've just got to keep soldiering on, keep marching on, keep playing our style, keep believing in the badge, keep believing in the players. We had a sergeant major come in and speak to the players and did a team talk before the game. We spoke about what a team is. And I finished off with my players and just said, a good team doesn't always get on. A good team has so many different fractions to it that are different. But they all have one common goal. And we look like we have one common goal. And we've got to be willing to go to the edge with each other and hold each other when maybe they're leaning over the edge and drag them back and push them over the line and push and shove and do what it takes. And today I think my players really played with the desire. I'd like to thank Sergeant Major came in and spoke to us, and I thought it was very inspirational in what he said. Even the plaque before that we opened up for PCK Palmer, that was again another lovely touch. This is a very unique football club. A very, very unique football club. And once again, my players are proud to play for it. And as a manager and as a staff, we're pleased to be here working. And I just feel that we've been let down by something out of our control. But like I said, it's not going to affect us because we had no control over it. But it was rubbish.
You got a tough period of games coming up. Obviously, you've got some in quick succession that's going to test your squad to its limits, I guess, with a few injuries, as you just mentioned. Does January not come quick enough in that respect?
That depends who we're winning.
Yeah, a good point, yeah.
But looking, we've met players, we've met agents, we're starting to plan for January. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, it's impossible to put into words today. obviously, first half especially, we played some magnificent football, which must give you cause for...
Yeah, listen, again, I'm always proud. I'm always proud of my players, as you know. But for you, congratulations on 50
Thank
years.
You. Thank you very much.
I'm sure there'll be many fans listening who've done a lot longer.
Oh, yeah.
I've felt so much more pain and just as much enjoyment. And hopefully we can bring them times back.
Appreciate it, Carl.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
overlap and chooses to use him. Holmes uses him decoy. Crosses now in towards McInnes. Ooh. Headed away. No, it's come to Fosu in the penalty area. Fosu, little step over. Fosu onto his left foot. Tariq Fosu still.
Yes!
2-1 Charlton.
Oh, what a finish.
Tariq Fosu, great work to come inside onto his left foot. Couple of step overs, worked a bit of space. His reverse shot past Cairns and Charlton are back ahead.
Oh, I've not got a cap, but if I had a cat, I'd be kicking it all over my house tonight.
Welcome back to Charlton Live. That was Carl Robertson threatening to harm felines. I think he had calmed down by the time he came in, but he was raging in the tunnel.
Yeah, I was expecting full-on rage, and I was waiting for it, and I thought, all I've got to do is ask one question, and then I'll let him go, because he'll just do everything for me. But he was remarkably subdued. I don't know if that was a quality streak or what, I don't know.
Well, after he'd finally taken out all his anger, that was the last bit of anger he had left.
And it was a toffee one, it wasn't even a soft centre.
No, not even a strawberry cream.
I was a bit surprised that, and he clearly didn't want to go down the same road again that he'd already been down in the three previous interviews. So he clearly wanted to sort of calm the waters. So,
after he did my interview in the tunnel, then he then went into the referee's dressing room, which was down the road. And by the way, I've never seen the two bouncers have to stand outside that before. I tried to stay around just to see, because I wanted to hear some cups being thrown at something, but he couldn't hear anything. So I'm sure he wasn't too happy. London Innit Geezer said, because Carl did mention, a very good MK Dons team, great fans. Do me a favour, Robinson, still not over his first love. I see a fake Dons team and silent away support. But there's plenty of tweets that have come in throughout the day, which I shall read to you now. Obviously, I asked about the penalty, so a lot of them are about the penalty, but you know, that's the beauty of football. Everyone has their own views on it. And also, someone else pointed out online yesterday that, you know, we've all watched that penalty decisions 50 times now, and no one's, I mean, us three in the studio perhaps seem to think it's not a penalty. Others online think it is a penalty. That shows why the video refs aren't going to solve that, are they? Because you'd have a video ref look at that and go, oh, I don't know, actually.
Well, I think what they should do is, I think if the referee gives a decision and then the video ref is asked to look at it, unless they can 100% conclusively say that it isn't, you know, to go against the ref, then they'll keep with the same decision. And the problem with that is, because it's all old pals act anyway, you'll see very few reversals, very few. Unless it's absolutely blatant, you won't see them.
Right, let's get involved then. Colin Hart sent us some tweets this afternoon and said, what I see, it was a soft pen, but Cashy did not need to try and win the ball. It looked like we had the defending under control. Cashy did not need to try and nick the ball. The situation looked under control, which I think is...
I wouldn't disagree with that, I've got to be honest, yeah. I mean, in hindsight, he didn't need to stick his foot there at all, but he still didn't really make any contact, but that's... I suppose that's neither end of there.
Eb James says, don't be so daft, of course it wasn't a penalty. We were sitting behind the Milton Keynes dugout and the linesman had been hassled all game by them. He, like the ref, had a mare of the game. It was obvious that the linesman caved in to too much pressure. The smile of contempt on their faces tell it all. Valley Freud, Floyd Fred says, if the referee had called it, I may have been able to have some minor acceptance of it, as he had the best view, but he didn't see anything. Then his idiot assistant started waving his flag in the air from further distance, and the ref showed no authority and gave it. Now, this sort of pointed to what I said earlier. Now, I mean, do you think that's the case? So the referee obviously is right there, and if he's not sure, then he doesn't give the penalty. But if the linesman's waving, can he then go...
Well, he should ask him what he's waving about, shouldn't he?
Well, he obviously knows what he's waving. He's waving for a penalty.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, in my opinion, and I would have thought, and if there's any referees listening, that they might be able to correct me. But if you're the referee and you're looking at it and you think, nah, it's not a penalty, then your linesman, who's 20 yards away with a worse view because his body's in the way, thinks it is, then you go and ask him what he saw that you didn't. And what did he think that made it a stone wall penalty that you thought wasn't?
Am I not right in thinking that he did go and speak to the linesman? I know he pointed to the spot, but then he did not speak to the linesman after?
No, he was just keeping players away, I think. I don't think he actually spoke to him at all. In as much as, why did you give it? Tell me the reason why I should now give a penalty when I didn't think it was one. Because surely that's the conversation you have. If you're a referee and you are in charge, then if you've seen something that you think, nah, it's definitely not a penalty, yet somebody else thinks, well, okay, let's say, for example, he didn't see Cashy's foot go down and make contact. Let's say he did make contact. And the linesman has seen him make contact, and that's what he's got to tell him.
But he didn't even have that conversation.
The lino's got to be so sure that it's a pen. To give it at that stage of the game, that lino was probably 100% sure that it was a pen.
But he wasn't.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's right. I think he was 100% sure. Doesn't make him correct because he was wrong.
But then what would happen if he was flagging for the pen and then the ref just goes, "Yeah, no, you're right, mate," and plays on? So then they'd be like, "Well, what's
no?" The referee has the power to do
that. Yeah, he does.
I can remember seeing. Yeah, you don't often see a referee overturn a penalty. You see a referee overturn a throw-in or something.
Because the view the lino's had is that he's had the player fall over it right in his line of vision. So all he's probably seen.
Naby Sarr's right in his line of vision, by the way.
Oh, is
he? If you have a look at it.
Oh, see, I thought the player was facing him, and he's obviously just seen the leg.
Pretty sure because the ball comes over Naby Sarr and whoever Naby was marking into the penalty box, and right behind him, which is where Paulett picks the ball up. So I'm pretty sure Naby Sarr's actually in his field of vision. How much so, I'm not sure. But the point is, of course, he's flagged for what, let's say he's genuine and thought it was a penalty. He's flagged it and flagged it so hard that I think, he's probably powered the grid for the next 3 months.
Doing his bit for the environment.
Exactly,
good on him. George says it was not a penalty. Dan Sheet said if it was us, we'd have got booked for diving. Then the Milton Keynes Dons fans found the bloody pole. Harry Wright said, ha, 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 ha.
No pen.
Luke said, for flip's sake. Kieran said, ha, 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 ha.
And we do the same. Look, you can't blame. I don't necessarily blame the MK Dons player. If he felt some sort of pressure on him, he goes down in the box. Do you
take
blame
a chance
him for that?
At that time. Exactly. Fossey's got booked for diving a few times.
Do you blame
this
their fans for lording it because they got away with one? No, because we'd do the same. So.
Exactly. Oh, I would. Yeah. I love it.
Interesting if there was a fan who a listener who was sitting maybe in line with a lino or something. It'd be an interesting one to see what they would think.
Yeah, just to see what the linesman's view was. Yeah. Gamby said it was a soft pen. The player going away from goal, Cashy shouldn't have gone tearing in and giving the opposition player a reason to go down. As much as I like Cashy, he's made a few mistakes this season that have cost us goals. F. James carries on. We have the makings of a very good competitive team. Marshy and Reeves will be instrumental in building this team. What I saw yesterday was so refreshing, fresh in the tackle. Must not let Holmes go. Cashy is so gritty. Caskey so tenacious. The list goes on. I mean, Nathan, you were lording up Forster Caskey.
Oh,
before.
Yeah. I've always seen Jake as one of the what they call like luxury, or as Robbo would say, a maverick, because he loves that one. But he's just really fluid, really technical on the ball. But yesterday he reminded me a lot like Bowes when he was younger. So he was very aggressive in his tackle. There was a few times where he put himself about a lot more than I've seen him this season. So you usually have Cashy will do all the sweeping and all the nitty gritty stuff, and then Caskey press. But yesterday he was diving in and winning the ball. And I thought Caskey played. Cashy had one of his poorer games for us, but I thought Caskey was unbelievable yesterday. I really enjoyed him yesterday.
F. James carries on. Carl Robertson must be allowed funds to bring in who he desires. Come May 2018, we'll be preparing for a consolidating season in the Championship. Forgive me if this sounds rather ridiculous. Let's forget about worrying about the present owners. Better the devil you know. If we do make the Premier League under this stewardship, then we should get on with supporting our club. Now, interesting points from Ev there. Obviously, he's saying if we make the Premier League under this stewardship, then there's a large majority of fans. I'd say a majority of fans out there who believe that we're not going to make the Premier League under this stewardship. We certainly would have made the Premier League under the way he's been running the club in years gone by. Some would argue it's now looking a bit different now. Sounds like he just leaves Carl to it, which has paid dividends this season a bit. But
yes and no. I mean, I think January will be huge in that respect.
I mean, that'll be such a telltale sign.
There have been times in watching Charlton that there have been pivotal moments, and I think this January could be up there with one of the biggest, because I think if we go and invest, I mean, they're talking about Leon Best is training with us. That's a relatively cheap option, but let's hope he does a job. They're talking about players coming in. Carl mentioned it in the interview with us. They've targeted players. Now, if they're able to bring players in and nobody goes, nobody leaves, then I'll probably put my hands up and say, actually, we seem to have turned a corner in terms of how we're running our football club at the moment. But if we sign a few, let's say, free transfers, loans, which help us up to a point, but then get rid of two or three of the key players that we've got now at the moment, then we're back to square one.
It's interesting. I mean, there was talk at the City Addicts meeting about Konsa, and a certain price was named, and he may go, and you know. But at the same time, I remember Lee Bowyer said in the interview in the summer that he thought he would go, and he didn't go. So hopefully, that's Carl just preparing for the worst.
I think they put a price tag on him. I think that's clear from the last time, and people were sniffing around for Konsa, and we said, well, if you're going to buy him, and that's a healthy change, because when you consider what we let Joe Gomez go for, so that's a healthy change. But if somebody comes in with that price tag, does that mean we're going to say yes? And, you know, arguably, he's been one of our better players this year. And we know how good he can be. And I'd just like to see him see the whole squad stay as it is and add to it. Yeah. Because if you look at, I think one of the reasons we probably didn't see that game out yesterday is, let's say, if we'd have had Billy Clark and a fit Tariq Fosser on the bench and maybe one or two others, then we wouldn't need to have, and I don't mean this, you know, Joe Rebo's still a young kid. Carlin, you know, isn't necessarily your answer off the bench in certain tight games like yesterday. A replacement potentially, or somebody like Josh McGuinness is. You know, when you look at the bench we had, apart from Tariq Fosu, you're looking at the bench thinking, who else is going to come on and actually change the game? And Joe Dodder isn't going to do that, bless him, is he? So, you know, I think our squad depth is still relatively weak.
It's interesting, Ev's point about better the devil you know. Now, I'm not certain we know the current devil we've got, because the devil we had 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, interfering in teams, we've all seen the emails, getting involved where he shouldn't, players coming in and out from where they shouldn't. I mean, that's a devil we knew before, and I didn't like that devil. The current devil, according to Belgian press, having just sold St. Truiden, he's tired, he's lost his interest in football, he's not getting involved. Carl admitted during the week that he hasn't spoken to him for months. The current devil is not the devil we knew. It's just a devil who, it sounds like, there's half a chance he's going to be gone anyway. Now, if that is the case, now, if he's gone soon, he's gotten bored of meddling now, if he's gone soon, we could be onto something special here if we get someone else in who's going to be a nice devil.
And that's the if, isn't it? And I sort of get what some, you know, that communication means, because, you know, there is always a chance that you get somebody worse. I'm not sure that's possible, that you know, we end up being in a worse position than we are now. But I sort of get the fear factor, let's say, because, you know, let's say you get an Oyster Knight, let's say you get the mob that run West Ham at the minute. You know, we all hope and pray that what comes next is just so much better and takes us forward. And that's what everybody hopes. But I sort of get the fear factor that it might not be the case.
I haven't, very annoyingly, I was having equipment issues with my radio stuff yesterday, so I didn't have time to go out and buy a voice of the Valley and find out what's going on.
I didn't either.
I've got one at home.
So, but it all sounded very positive from what you're sort of reading. So I'll go pick up one of those on Tuesday and find out what Rick can tell us. Right, Reese sent in big long message, says, I haven't left the Valley as angry as I was yesterday in years. Absolutely shocking decision, and could be 2 points that cost us massively at the end of the season. The fact the ref who didn't give it listened to the linesman who had a much worse view just defies belief. As for the performance first half and start of the second, I thought we were great, played great football and defended well when needed. As soon as we conceded, though, we seemed to panic and play poorly, and I don't know why. Still deserved the win over the 90 minutes, and so frustrating we didn't. Got to take our chances, though, when they come. Marshall and Sarge should have scored at 1-0, and that would have sealed it. We can't rely on keeping a clean sheet every week after going 1-0 up. Fort Cashy had a poor game, but hopefully just one off, as he's been great this season. Sarr, Holmes and McGuinness, I thought, had very good games. So need to win on Tuesday now, going into the massive game against Scunthorpe on Saturday. Now they're above us.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
London in the Geezer says, we were different class to MK Dons. We missed two, possibly three sitters, and it cost us, only ourselves to blame. And then Sebo says, another 7 points from Rochdale, Scunthorpe, Peterborough, and we will have 38 points from 19 games and still be in a great position. I think that's, you know, like I say, it's a disappointing at full time yesterday. It's a draw, but come on, we're having a good season and we're playing well. And yesterday we played well.
I think it probably shows that the strides we've made, because you know, this time last season that point would have been we'd have all been saying, well, it's a point. You know it's a point, one more point to either safety or mid-table obscurity. But now we're disappointed, and really disappointed, because we can see the possibilities of gaining ground on those top two. I mean, if we'd have won yesterday, then you know, we could have been in a real touching distance. So that's, I think that's why perhaps it's a mark of how much further we've come, is that we're really disappointed about only getting a point.
Charlton XO, of course, is the Carl Robertson fangirl, said, fair play to Carl. That interview was calm, polite, thoughtful and measured. Well done for him. He's obviously learning. You need to listen to a BBC London. He'd calmed down
there
massively.
There must have been a huge 5 minutes between him him coming in from that room next door and coming in here.
London Igiza, remember a goal versus Colchester a few years ago. The ref gave it, didn't give it, gave it again. I mean, that's there was confusion between that. I think that the referee decided the linesman to put his flag up when he hadn't. And then gave the goal, but he'd already blown the whistle, so he can't give the goal. So that was that one. Now, just finally, before we go to a quick break, Phil says, evening all, I trust you well. Perspective is important after a game like yesterday, remembering how far we've come in the last 12 months. Honestly, this was a game we looked good in and drew, in contrast to some of our performances where we've looked unconvincing and won. It was impossible to see the challenge that led to the penalty from the North Lower, as I'm sure Nath will tell you. However, Cashy had no business giving the referee a decision to make, as the player was going nowhere and it was being closely marked. Having seen it afterwards, I suppose from the Lino's distant angle, I can see why he may have thought it was a penalty. However, this was a guess at best. Despite the error in judgment from Cashy, he's been a colossus at times this season, and certainly one of the first names on the team sheet. I imagine Kyle would echo that sentiment. What I did see was Ben Reeves clearly and cynically being taken out in the build-up to the first goal. I'm sure there were things we could do, could have done better afterwards to prevent the goal, but the way we play, losing the ball in that area leaves us susceptible to counter-attack. Overall, plenty more positives than negatives to be taken from yesterday's game, in my opinion, and I thought Konza and Saar in particular looked impressive, with the latter unlucky not to score. We'll go again Tuesday. Great show as always. All the best from Phil. Thanks, Phil, for your message there. And if you guys want to have your say on anything, don't forget our Player in Focus in the second half of the show. Later on will be Ben Reeves. So there's tweets out there about Ben Reeves. If you can respond to them, let us know what you've made of him. He's scored 4 goals already. So yeah, let us know what you've made of him so far coming back from injury. Let's have a quick break here on Charlton Live. Still plenty of correspondence to read out. And of course, we're going to celebrate Terry's 50 years in charge. In charge. 50 years watching.
Absolute. About time you recognise that.
Watching Charlton back in 30 seconds. I put my heart on the line for you. Put my
heart on the line for you. And further out to Fossil on his left. De Silva's on the overlap. De Silva, ball into the box, looking for McGuinness, gets his head there, but just skips off his head, in fact, and Solly will pick it up on the far side. Chip ball banging in the box, headed clear, drops to Ricky Holmes with a chance. Oh, what a cracker! Oh, Ricky Holmes, what a belter that is! Absolute stalker of a shot. Put my heart on the line for you.
Welcome back to Chuck and I. Thanks to Glove Pup, who's been making our new idents, by the way. That's not my choice of music.
David, come on, Glove Pup.
Midlife crisis, isn't he?
well, that started 50 years ago for him. Right, we've got plenty of emails that have come through on yesterday's game. The first one's from Chris Davin. Says, dodgy pen and a foul on Reeves for the first goal, but that's no excuse for me. So, he said he sent it back on his way home from an entertaining 2-0 draw. We should have put the fake Dons to bed in the first half, but we didn't. Konza had his worst game in a Charlton shirt. Maybe Robert advising him to leave had an adverse effect. Let's face it, if your manager advises you to leave, is it really any motivation? Now, I mean, see, this is quite hard to read, because I mean, Carl it's all second-hand quotes anyway, because he was at the City Addicts meeting and we don't know exactly what he said, but some people are saying he said something along the lines of, you know, if I was him, I'd probably be tempted to leave. But is that not just footballers' mentality anyway?
That depends who comes in for him, doesn't it? I mean, it's like Joe Gomez. If Liverpool comes a calling, or any of the top six sides come calling from the Premier League, you're going to think, well, actually, you know, and if I've got a really good chance to go, then you wouldn't blame them for doing so. But if it's to a lower league, Premier League club, where, or a club where he's going to be, you know, he's going to be sitting on the bench for 3 years, then it makes less sense. So, I mean, Carl's probably trying to be philosophical about it, I guess. You know, if a big club comes in, you can't stand in his way, and if it's enough money, then the club are going to say yes. So maybe he's just looking at that, and it's been taken the wrong way. I don't know.
But honest, isn't he?
I mean, although in direct opposition to that statement, I thought Konsa was brilliant for the first 40 minutes. I think it was just that last 5 minute period when they really started getting stuck into us, and then periods in that second half where he was under a huge amount of pressure, that I thought he didn't have the defender beside him to bail him out of trouble, to be behind him, to clear the ball, clear his lines. And that partnership he's had with Bauer has been superb. I think the partnership with Pearce would be the same. And I go back to my earlier point, I think two footballing centre-halves aren't necessarily a perfect partnership for me. So I think when we were under pressure, you know, he started to panic a little bit. And I'm not sure that's down to any loss of concentration because he's already thinking about moving elsewhere. I just think that's he's a young kid still learning.
Yeah. Jury definitely out on Reeves. Decent against Truro and Checker Trade Cup, but a proper game today. And Anonymous, shame we didn't close the gap on Wigan and the Shrews again against, and let's face it, poor opponents. But we go again on Tuesday. Thanks for your email, Mr. Davin there. Robert Barr says, good evening all. Fortunately, we have another match on Tuesday because I'm absolutely gutted about how that match just finished. I thought we were outstanding in the first hour. Some of the football produced was brilliant, intelligent and expansive. Honestly, the biggest shame was there and not enough people there to witness it because it was a joy to behold. All the players looked incredibly comfortable when in possession of the football. We could have been 3-4-5-0 up, which resulted in MK trying to kick us off the pitch. Now, they were a cloggers, weren't they? They were kickers. However, this quickly changed after their subs. We allowed a very average team an opportunity to get a foothold into the match, which they did not deserve to be in. Overall, gutted that we could not get the 3 points. I thought the officials were very poor, but we should not ignore the two misses by Saar and Forster-Kaski. Both were shocking misses. Finally, I wonder if MK have a criteria within their job description, say saying constant non-stop moaning to the officials is fully essential. Carl Robinson was one of the worst offenders when he managed them, and he does it now as well. And Robbie Nielsen was probably even worse. Just keep up the good work. That's from Robert. I mean, Carl moans at the officials anyway. The worst moaner at the official in the league, of course, is Steve Evans, was now in League Two. But, I mean, Carl gives as good as he gets, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's funny. If you look before the game when the officials come to warm up, they all have a sort of sideways glass talk on. There's always that little bit of banter between them, so they obviously know what he's like.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if that's counterproductive sometimes.
I think Carl's always very aware of how he deals with people and how he gets them on side, or how he, you know, the way he speaks about refs, or the way he speaks very nicely about, for example, AFC Wimbledon's manager that slags off the fans. I think he knows when he's speaking about people how other people are going to react to that. And I think he probably tries to use that with the referees as well. This is from Connor Potter. Says, hi all, I thought we played well yesterday. The referee had a really poor game. Their first goal was a crunching tackle on Ben Reeves. I was sat with a perfect view of that penalty. This might have been the view we were after. Mm. Never was it a penalty. Cashy actually got a slight touch on the ball and their player dived to win the pen. Not sure how the linesman could give it when the ref had a closer good view of it. Time to get out of this division so we don't get refs like this. That's from Connor.
That's a very good point, by the way.
Well, you say that though. I mean,
Mind you, my best mate was on top form for the Leeds game. Did you see?
Oh, was that today? Oh, yeah. The penalty that Middlesbrough got was unbelievable. So if anyone didn't,
Stroud.
Oh, Stroud.
Yeah, if anyone didn't watch the the Leeds Middlesbrough game this afternoon, Middlesbrough's penalty to get back into the game, they had a corner or a free kick. The ball came over, and the Middlesbrough player had both arms over the Leeds player, threw him to the floor. And then the keeper caught the ball, and so the Middlesbrough defender started running back. And then the Leeds player just chipped him slightly. He went down and he got a penalty. He was the one who'd thrown him to the floor. Right, Mark Newbury. Feels like a real kick in the baubles. So it's good to see Mark getting in the Christmas spirit already. It says, evening chaps, I like the fact that Terry's game anniversary was recognised yesterday, and well done to him for surviving the past 50 years of the roller coaster that is our club. Well
done, Shell. Thank you.
We didn't get what we probably deserved, and the elation of the own goal to the complete downer when you saw the linesman, never assistant referees, putting his flag across his chest to indicate that he had absolutely no doubt it was a pen, even though the ref with a clearer, nearer view hadn't given it. I couldn't work out from the footage if any of our players had fouled theirs. And it was reported differently in papers as Cashy or Konsa. I mean, it was Cashy.
I don't know if Konsa was the defender behind it. I think Konsa was the man who was shepherding Paul out of the way, but it was Cashew who put his foot in, definitely.
Mark points out as well that the linesman has to be certain. So for whatever reason it was, the linesman was certain that he made that decision. I'm certain about a few things about him.
I'm certain that he wanted to give a penalty. I'm not entirely certain. Sure, he was certain that it was one.
Yeah, MK were a dirty side, and the funny running ref did nothing to protect our players from cynical digs and kicks. And Ricky was inches from getting into the area himself before being nobbled. Would have walked it if Marshall had finished his 1-on-1, and there would have been no way they'd come back from 2-0 down. But that's for Carl to address with a contract for Best, just to be able to come on and to support Josh. Man of the match, big Nabby for both his play and getting his body in the way when an MK player was trying to hit De Silva. I mean, you should pick on someone your own size, shouldn't you?
I've got to say, actually, it's one thing that I did like. It's something we haven't had for a while either. That wrestling match that happened with Holmes and Williams. Mm. You saw Ibex Lendl run from the centre half position all the way there to grab Ricky Holmes. Immediately behind him, and not far away, was Josh McGuinness to do exactly the same. But he pulled Ibex Lendl away and said, "No, you're not." Yeah, man, we haven't seen that for a while. That sort of team spirit where you're not doing that to our players. You know, you're not picking on our players. We've been soft for a while. We're not soft now, and that's really good to see, because you want that. You want players to be, if you're gonna kick one of mine, you're going to get one back. And we haven't had that for a while.
Yeah, Terry's views on gang violence are the same as Charlton Lives, I'd like to point out here. So thanks for that, Mark. This is from Tom Wallin. Touches on the Terry stuff as well, so I'm going to read it out as well. All right, boys, thought we played well yesterday, but should have been out of sight. Delighted to see Josh score again. He was brilliant all over the pitch. Thought Reeves looked like he was on a one-man mission to score. And that cost us at times. It's funny, really, because it was Tom who chose the cashy back bet, which was Reeves to score twice. So maybe Reeves was aware of that, trying to win some money for charity.
He's been listening.
That's actually Tom's fault. Nabi and Ez looked comfortable in the first half, but once they got their goal, looked a little shaky. Ref was a complete moron. Terry,
thank you.
Ruined the game, blowing for decisions that weren't, ignoring ones that were. Hate blaming officials for results, and think despite him, we should have won anyway. But he didn't help. The worst thing about him was his knees up, Mother Brown running style.
That's the one. I was trying to think of the tune. That was it.
Followed closely by his school teacher, come here gestures every time he books someone, and his sheer incompetence at doing the job he's paid to do. On a more positive note, massive congratulations to Terry on 50 years following Charlton, spending half your life following a basket club like this. basket case club of this is no defeat. Yeah, it's a quarter, isn't it? In all seriousness, it shows passion, dedication, loyalty and care to follow a club for so long through ups and downs, and that deserves a celebration. I look forward to celebrating it next month. Yeah, by the way, if you want to join us to celebrate Terry's, we're all going down to Rosa Denmark after the...
Both.
Oh, yeah. Are you right?
Yeah, well, yes.
We've got work to do.
I'm not doing any work that day. No, I'm day off.
All right. Greg and Tom doing it?
Yeah, probably. I don't know. Whoever. I don't care.
Yeah. So basically, on the 23rd of December after the Blackpool game, we're all going down the road.
I'm on the source beforehand and after.
No, I'll just do the commentary. That's what you normally do.
No, I'm in the terraces. I'm back to singing like a lunatic.
I like that. I bet you get kicked out or something.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. You know Stroud's going to be referee.
So he's looking forward to it. He says, win Tuesday and we can put this behind us. There's plenty of good in the performance, so I'm not too down, just so long as that Wazuk isn't reffing. I mean, Terry's unlikely to be asked to be reffing, so so there we go. Now this is from Bob Knight. Now this is on a television programme which I haven't actually watched yet, but a lot of people have said it was very good. Now this was a television programme with Alan Shearer talking about dementia. I think it seems to be related to heading the football, and a former Charlton player was involved. It says, hi guys, the Alan and Shearer programme last Sunday on the football related dementia had a feature on Matt Tees. Matt, did you ever see Matt Tees play it?
He was in the side, my first ever side. Yes.
He's in one of these programmes.
Matt was a favourite of mine in the late 60s and was known to probably head a ball as forcefully as a lot of players could kick it. He once got on the end of a driven clearance on the edge of the box with a diving header that whistled past the keeper for a goal. My fondest memory was the Cup replay 1969 against Palace at Selhurst, when Matt and Ray Treacy took Palace apart, although Palace missed a penalty. After the game, I went into the fish and chip shop in Charlton Village, and Charlie Wright, our goalkeeper, and I believe Matt T's brother-in-law came in. I asked him if he had saved the penalty, as it was at the other end to us, but he said it hit the post, although he had it covered. These were ordinary, down-to-earth guys who played a sport they loved without the rewards now in the game. I wish Matt and his family all the best in their lives going forward. Now, Tell, We want to talk. I mean, you talk about Matt Tees quickly because, like I say, he was involved in your first team. But I don't know too much about the player. So, what can you tell us about the player? Because obviously, some fond memories from Bob there. About
yeah, absolutely. About I mean, I don't. If I'm honest, I don't remember Matt Tees hugely individually because I was only six, and so individual players tend to pass me by a little bit at six. It wasn't really till the next couple of years I started really sort of focusing on individual players. But certainly had a reputation for exactly what he's been describing there as being that sort of. I mean, his number was eight, but he always seemed to be, as far as I remember, always seemed to be more of a striker than a midfield player. But I think he summed up what was true of most of the players of that era. And I don't want this to sound like, it was better in my day and all that, right? Because I don't agree with that. But they were different then, you know. And I've been lucky enough to interview quite a few of that era, like the Bob Kurtz, the Paul Wentz and the Keith Peacocks and Harry Gregory, Brian Kinsey, and I've been lucky enough, really lucky, to have met them since. And they are really down to earth people who just saw themselves as doing really lucky to be doing a job that they loved and not being paid a huge amount for it. Obviously, relatively compared to other people of that era, they probably were, but. They just loved playing, and they played far too often with injuries, and that's coming home to roost. And I think the whole dementia program highlighted that. If it's proved that that's the case, then something has to be done. Of course, I mean, something seriously has to be done. Now, quite how you do it, there's two schools of thought. You just stop kids heading the ball until they're 18 or 19 or something. But on the other,
you won't have any technique then.
Yeah, well, that's the point. On the other hand, they don't have any technique, and it could be worse by the time they go then to try and head a ball in proper football, as it were. So I think heading the ball properly and being taught how to head a ball properly may be more of an advantage than just stopping them doing it at all.
Now, back on the referee situation, Matthias Johnson, who, as we know, is a referee himself, has said, stupid penalty to give away, but Carl should focus on his players' performance rather than the referee, a positive performance. Looking forward to Portsmouth.
Typical referees answer that.
Right. Let's have a break now. And like, as we've been mentioning throughout the show, 50 years since his first Addicts game yesterday for Tel. So we're going to have a little Q&A to find out Terry's favourite and worst memories from those 50 years.
Throw from Holmes into Solly. Solly cross ball. Foster's on the far side. Get something on it.
Yes!
Finished off by Foster Caskey. And Charlton have the lead.
Fat enough, ugly, just stupid enough to take it. That's my wife's words, that, by the way.
So welcome back to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. London Innit Geezer said, Terry's just being nice to you kids. It was way better back in our day.
Fair enough.
He's just trying to sweeten us up there, Terry.
Yeah. No, fair enough. Yeah, okay. I'll accept that.
Yeah. Interesting question from Bob, actually, just tweeted in. Wonder how many of us members of the 50 Club still attend matches? Because I was thinking of putting it out there.
And I'd like to say that I'm in a fairly privileged position, and I feel a bit guilty that, you know, I'm lauding my 50th when there are people out there who have done far more and probably been to far more games than I have. So more credit to them than me.
But at the same time, it's a nice...
Oh, no, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I'm lauding it big time.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, and lots of nice... memories as well. And is the nice thing about, of course, the game that we're going to have on the 23rd of December that we're going out to celebrate after, is the opponents are exactly the same team that we played in your first game, Blackpool, and also the game that you celebrated your dad's life with as well.
It's weird, yeah, that the way that's happened, because obviously Blackpool was the first game I watched Charlton to play against, and then we got relegated in my 40th year. We got relegated from the Premier League. Blackpool got promoted from League One, so we were facing them again in the Championship in my 40th year. So when that was obviously going to be the case, I thought, I'm going to do something special on that particular game. And I'd thought at the time was we'd just go for a drink up. I'd probably retrace my old route by getting a bus, a 96 bus from Crayford to Woolwich, and then a 177 up to Charlton or something like that. You know, nothing huge. Then, of course, my father passed away. Sadly, and so I thought, actually, I'll do something a bit more than that. And so we sponsored the game, the whole game, and we were the only match sponsors, which was really unusual because usually there were three or four. It was a lovely thing to do. I'm really pleased I did it. And then, of course, we're on the 50th, and Blackpool get promoted again, and we're facing them again.
Yeah, and only a month outside of the anniversary.
Exactly.
As well,
yeah, now so, I did,
and it's just before Christmas.
Yeah, so. I had a serious thought about doing it for yesterday's game, going on the source and just really enjoying yesterday's game. But then I thought, I actually because of what I do now has been a huge part of the last sort of good number of years, 10 or so. Then I thought, actually, I want to commentate on it. I really do want to commentate because it marks where I've come from to where I am now. And then it's just before Christmas, the 23rd, so we can all let ourselves go.
It's crazy to think. I can't imagine you thought 50 years ago when you attended your first game. So I reckon in 50 years' time, I imagine I'll be the club commentator.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah. Although I've got to say,
I mean, did they even have radio then?
They had no. You had Mr. Neve, who was the announcer, and he was up in the box. So there was no pitch side announcer then. It was one guy doing it all. And he always said the same thing. Good afternoon, ladies, gentlemen, boys and girls. Welcome to the Valley. That was his stock in trade. And he had a great voice, by the way. So I always admired the voice, but never even had an inkling back then. To be honest, it wasn't until I fell into radio 20-odd years ago that I even give it a thought.
Well, excellent. Right, so Brian Cole actually emailed saying, "Hi fellas, just a quick email to say congratulations to Terry on enduring 50 years of supporting the Addicts, Charlton through and through, and a smashing bloke and all the voice of reason in the commentaries, especially when identifying moronic refs."
A big thank you to Brian for that pitch side announcement yesterday afternoon. Really, really appreciate that, mate. And when you consider the distance that fella travels to come to home games and away games from Portsmouth, he deserves more credit than I do. And he did 50 years last year, by the way, so he should be applauded.
And when he goes to away games, he has another 100 miles on top of everyone else, which is impressive. Right, so I thought to... Hey, obviously, I know you reasonably well. Well, there's probably loads of skeletons in the closet. I don't want to know.
I thought
a nice way to... Because, like I say, without sounding condescending, you've seen a lot of history now of the club and things that myself and Nath and a fair few of the listeners won't have seen. So I'm sure you've got memories of games gone by. So I've just written a load of questions... to ask
scary
you
because I'm rubbish at this.
Yeah, but the first one is quite simple. So what are your memories of your first game against Blackpool?
Oh, strangely, I have vivid memories of, and it started. I don't want to bore people, but there were only two reasons my dad took me out anywhere. There were only ever two, and one was to get me a haircut, and one was to go and get footwear. They were the only two. So the haircut was in Crayford, and it was, you see pictures, if you're in the barbers or in the hairdressers, you see that old school picture of a bloke hacking at a kid's head with a pair of shears. That's pretty much what he was, right?
So I hadn't even invented scissors.
No, short back and sides with a pair of shears. and so that was one on a plank. That's the one choice. The second choice was footwear. Now, my dad, for whatever reason best known to himself, was obsessed with sandals and open-toed ones at that. Oh, exactly, right? Have you ever tried to play football in open-toed sandals? In November, by the way. It's really difficult. And you can get into fights for that sort of stuff. You know, you go to school wearing open-toed sandals. It was, even back then, it was a deal. So, he said to me on the 18th, it's a good couple of weeks for my birthday, but my dad was working on the buses, so he did shift work. He worked Saturday, so he wasn't always about. For particular days, so this was the only Saturday he could have, so he decided to take me, and I had no idea where I was going. And I've got to say, before that point, there was only one football team in the country. If you believe the television, if you believe the papers, if you believe everything, there was only one football club in the country, and that was Man United. So it's all you ever heard about: Georgie Best, Bobby Charlton, Dennis Law, the whole Paddy Cray, and the whole team just were the only thing you ever saw. So, to all intents and purposes, I love football, watching football on the telly, but, all I never knew were Man United players, and so Bobby Charlton and all that. So, when he said, he didn't tell me where he was going, I thought, first of all, it's haircut. We got a bus. Oh, Christ, it's sandals. Then we stayed on the bus past Bexleyheath Clock Tower, which I'd never been past Bexleyheath Clock Tower before. I thought the world ended at Bexleyheath.
A whole new world. Well, often, if you're in Bexleyheath, people have thought.
Yeah, there you go. And then I ended up in Woolwich, which was a different planet, to be fair, but... And then I had to ask him where we were going, and he said we're going to watch football, Charlton. So in my 6-year-old head, I'm thinking we're going to see Bobby Charlton.
Oh, no.
This is true, and I remember that vividly. We get the bus ride up to get off at outside Ransom Walk. That walk down used to be steps then, by the way, down steps to Ransom Walk through the archway, and then you first see the ground, and that was just that was just awe inspiring for a start. And then we go through the turnstiles. And then up the steps into the Covered End, And that again, you know, to see the pitch unfold before me was just wow, you know, it's a wow moment. So he sticks me behind the goal on the railings, because that's what happened then. The kids were by the railings, the parents got their space behind them, and my dad, I think, ended up about six or seven rows back. And then the players came out, and that's another thing. You know, you just think to the red Robin. I think this is just a different world. Superb. And then the game unfolds, and I'm loving it. You know, and I'm hooked. And then as the players come out, I've turned around thinking my dad's close, and he wasn't, of course. And I said, "Which one's Bobby Charlton?" Because you do, because that's what I thought it was there for. And some bloke said, "It's Charlton Athletic, not Bobby Charlton, you stupid boy." And that stayed with me forever. And then the game, I thought, you know, balls whistling past the goal and all, just utterly hooked from that moment on.
Yeah, well, funny enough, that was my next question. When did you realise you're hooked?
Straight away. And then my dad obviously couldn't take me again for a good few years, or at all, actually. So
well, because you're embarrassing with
that. Well, that as well, obviously, yeah. Because of his work. So he took me once then to an FA Cup game. I'm pretty sure we were playing Crystal Palace, but I couldn't swear to it. And I do believe Malcolm Allison was the manager. Mm. And then he took me to Selhurst Park to an away game, and that was a mission, as I remember. So he took me sporadically in between. But then from the age of about 10, I started borrowing money off him to get the bus to Charlton to get in on my own. And I was 10 and I was going on my own. You wouldn't do that now, would you?
No.
But it was fairly safe, other than a few run-ins with some West Ham fans in Woolwich. Pretty much every other week.
Surely they'd leave a 10-year-old boy.
No, not if they got scarves. They were fair game. Yeah, silk scarves. I used to save up money for silk scarves, and then probably get them nicked in Woolwich by West Ham fans.
Yeah. Oh, that's a bit harsh. Mm. I'm glad they lost today. throughout those years, who was your favourite team? Your favourite season?
It's difficult to say season. Actually, I suppose I'd have to say 79-80, because that's when I first got a job, and then I could afford to go home and away, and I did two seasons running, home and away. And it's the first time, because before I was only coming to Charlton then, borrowing money from my dad, coming to Charlton. I couldn't get to away games at all, couldn't afford it, and he wouldn't let me anyway. So that season, 79-80, was the first time I went home and away. So that's probably, you know, when you go to Grimsby on a cold Tuesday night, or Walsall on a cold, and I hitchhiked to Walsall, I remember once.
Is that the game you told us we lost?
Well, no, we were winning 2-0, and Dick Tyman gave away two sloppy back passes, and we ended up drawing 2-2. I got soaked through to the skin that day as well. So that season probably is the one that I remember most, because I think that what that did, it was cemented my passion for the club. I think, you know, compared to others, I pale into insignificance. There are far more passionate fans than me, but that home and away sort of meant that I thought then I was proper Charlton.
Who's been your favourite player throughout the years?
And that's a really tough one. My first ever idol was Ray Tracy, because he was Irish and he was a striker and he scored some real spectacular goals. I think you've seen a few of them on the telly. The one against Derby specifically, where he volleyed it into the top corner. But he, because he was Irish and our family connection, he was my proper first hero. Then it was Colin Powell. And Derek Howell's probably as a partnership, because Colin Powell was my type of player. Just hug the touchline and do nothing for as long as possible and then burst into action, which was what I tried to do a lot. I got the stick in the touchline to do nothing bit spot on. It was the other bit.
I can do that.
The other bit I didn't quite grasp.
Your favourite manager throughout the years? We've had a handful of excellent managers.
People might be surprised at this, actually, because...
Cameron Fry. Yeah.
Well, he's my drinking buddy, as you know.
That's a story that will come out in the years.
You know, I'd have to say, you know, you've got to say Kirbishley's up there, and Lenny Lawrence for me as well, by the way, who managed to keep us in the first division under huge pressure and difficult circumstances. But the one who I think probably should have done a lot more for us, what wasn't allowed to, and I think could have gone on to being something special, was Mike Bailey.
All right, I must admit I don't know much.
Yeah,
about
Mike Bailey was a player as well for us, and a really good. He played for England while he was at Wolves. But he came to us and he shaped that side that then Alan Mullery took over. And I thought harshly got the elbow when he fashioned a team that was a really good side.
If you had to pick a favourite ever game, I mean, obviously there's the obvious ones, the playoff finals, the, you know, promotion games. But is there one with a personal significance? For example, the Blackpool game, to celebrate your father.
That is a really tough. We've had so many games where. I mean, I think actually, in terms of emotion, the game, first game back at the Valley with Portsmouth, is probably up there, more so than the playoff final, because that really meant a lot to me being back. Because I said I didn't just fall in love with this football team. I fell in love with a place. And don't get me wrong, it was a dump for a good, long, good many years. But it was a place where, you know, you could escape the normal nonsense at home or at work or at school or whatever it was. And so the whole building and football pitch was what drove me to this place. And so coming back here was special.
And I think my final question, I'm going to have to skip a few because we're running out of time.
Sorry, boys.
I think I know the answer to this. What's the closest you've come to packing it in? That's pretty much the answer I was expecting.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever come that close. I haven't. Yeah. You know, I think I've come close to walking out a few times, but never, never ever, I think, have I ever come close to thinking, no, there's no way I'm not coming back here.
That's what I thought. Excellent. Well, Tell, it's been great to hear that. Actually.
I appreciate that.
Congratulations on your 50th anniversary. And like I say, on the 23rd of December, we're all going down to Rose of Denmark after the Blackpool game. So if anyone wants to join us to celebrate Terry's anniversary, we will do. Right, we've almost run out of time, but there is time to do this week's Player in Focus, which is Ben Reeves. Now, I've got a feeling that Ben Reeves is going to be one of those players who either scores goals or does nothing. I've just got, there's something about him that I think he's going to do that. So I've asked the people on Twitter. Fred says he thinks there's more to come still after the four goals he has already scored. Because don't forget, he scored a hatful of goals already. Now, if he can keep up a decent scoring ratio, and he did have a couple of chances yesterday, then he could be a real asset from midfield, which is where our goals come from.
Yeah.
Reese said he's performed well in the cup games like Crawley and Fulham in the Chequer trade, scoring in both, but wasn't as good as I'd hoped yesterday. Certainly a good second choice between Clark and possibly first choice if he can prove himself in a league game a bit more while Clark is injured. London Eagles says agree, though maybe he's not fully fit yet, but for me Clark is a lot more threatening. Views on that?
I think Clark's a lot gets about the pitch a lot more, or has done so far, but it's a bit harsh to compare at the moment because Reeves has only had a couple of games back since coming back from injury. So, I mean, I've got to be honest, I'm really desperately trying to remember what Ben Reeves was like when he played against us, and I can't.
So, well, I remember him scoring goals. That's
yeah,
the thing,
I remember him being in the right place at the right time.
The FA Cup game against NK at home last season, he had a couple of chances as well. I remember him looking quite good. Now, we've almost run out of time, so I'll retweet your tweet, Bob, about your first game back at the Valley. But it's also congratulations from Matthias for your anniversary.
Thanks, Matthias.
Obviously, it's back at the Valley here on Tuesday, and I'm glad that Mark Newbury's just brought this to my attention. It says, because I love a stat, me. I love tweeting stats to try and ruin it for everyone. It says, for the love of sweet baby Jesus, don't mention that Rochdale have not won away all season. Mendes curse.
Don't mention it. Yeah, don't mention that, Mark. Whatever you do, don't mention it.
No one mention that. Right, this has been Charlton Live. I hope you've enjoyed it here on your Sunday evening. Thanks for all your correspondence. Thank you, Nathan, for coming in.
Cheers. Thank you. Yep. See you Tuesday.
And Terry, of course, on your special weekend.
Thank you. Apologise if I bored anybody.
It didn't bore me.
But I loved it. Thank you.
Yeah, so thanks for that. Thanks to all of you who've listened and joined in. I've been Louis Meadows. Hope you've enjoyed it. Hopefully, I'm going to be back on Thursday. Neither Nathan or Tom are around, but I'm going to try and see what I can do to get a show to go ahead. But if we are, we'll see you then. If not, we'll see you next Sunday. But I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks for your emails and tweets, and we'll see you later.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Undaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Undaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.